Welcome into the Wednesday edition of Darkness Radio. It means one thing and one thing only. It's time for Parashare and Supernatural News. You guys are lacking a little bit on the Parashare, I'm not going to lie. You need to send your emails in, tim@darknessradio.com, or click that blue button at darknessradioshow.com, and we'll be able to hear you, actually, hear your voices. Being it is a Wednesday, we got to bring in a co-host. Let's bring in that co-host you guys love so much. You've been sending in your emails tim@darknessradio to enter into the Darkness Radio Millionaires Club drawing, which we're going to do today at the end of the show. So you know what? Let's bring him in. He's the BCB, the big cuddly bear himself. It's Beer City Bruiser. Bruiser, how you doing?
Hello, Cruiser, and all the listeners. I'm doing great.
Good.
You look like you've ripped all your hair out.
I have, yeah. And all the hair out of my chinny chin chin, too. Don't ever let somebody tell you that these contests are easy. They're not. Although I do love each and every one of our listeners. By gosh, I put out a little blast last night on social media.
Oh yeah, the last minute social media blast.
Yeah, I gave everybody 12 hours. I said you got 12 hours to get your entries in. Noon Central Time is what I said. Noon Central Time on Tuesday. And of course, what did I get after noon? I got plenty of people going, oh, here's my entry. There's always a straggler. Sorry, folks, if you got in after noon on noon Central Time or you tried to sneak it in, it didn't make it.
So, yeah.
Just letting you know.
We got to obey the rules.
Mm-hmm.
Rules are there for a reason, and we have to obey them.
That's right. Your entry.
We got to be fair to everybody.
Your entry did not make it if it was after noon Central Time. So, sorry. That's just the way it is.
We gave plenty of time for this.
Though, we did.
If you think about it.
There were weeks and weeks and weeks to get in on this deal.
Almost a month, if you think about it, because it was around October, around this time in October when we announced it.
Yeah, yeah. It's been a while. Yeah.
Yeah.
So we're going to do the big drawing today for the grand prize. By the way, we're going to do some secondary prizes as well. I don't know that we'll draw that on the air today. We might just notify winners off air.
Yeah.
And let them know that they won. So
yeah, and they can thank us on social media, and that's how everybody will know they won.
Yeah, because we're gonna maybe conduct that business off air. So it's just easier to do that. During the week last week, some sad news is a couple of I guess you could say icons passed away.
My childhood.
Yeah,
they were icons of my childhood.
A lot of people's childhood. Kevin Conroy, who was the voice of Batman on the cartoon series.
The animated series.
The animated series.
I watched it every day.
Past
the 90s.
Yeah. Very sad indeed. In fact, a lot of people say he was the Batman.
See, I disagree with that. To me, the Batman will always be Adam West.
Yeah, yeah.
Although, but the voice of Batman will be him.
You know, he did get a turn as Batman in one show.
Did he?
Kevin Conroy did, yes. In Crisis of Ultimate Earths, was it, I forget which CW series it was. They were doing the big crossover between Arrow, Supergirl, so I don't remember which.
Legends of Tomorrow, I believe it was, wasn't it?
Yeah, Legends of Tomorrow.
It might have been.
Yeah.
I didn't watch the show, but I heard. I didn't know he was the one that came and was Batman.
Yeah, he came out as Batman. He was the older Batman that had already given up his oath to killing. That was okay. Kevin Conroy.
Well, yeah, I remember him and Mark Hamill are just two that I hold close because that was part of my childhood. That was, you know, after school, getting home, turning on Batman the Animated Series, and it was like, all right, you got a Joker episode with Hamill, you knew you were in for a treat. And if it wasn't a Joker episode, Kevin just nailed it as Batman. Like,
true, very true.
He was that perfect broody, but not, you know, over hyperventilating like some of the Batmans. Mm-hmm. You know,
yep.
He wasn't pompous like a George Clooney Batman. You know,
George Clooney was the worst.
Oh. Yeah. Well, Yeah.
No, he was.
Yeah.
Even he
was.
Makes fun of his own, you know, turn as Batman. There was when the latest movie came out, they did with Julia Roberts, he was cracking Batman jokes about, you know, they haven't called me to come back to do the role. I wonder why.
Oh, gee, I wonder.
Yeah.
So probably the worst Batman movie ever.
Yeah. Even he knows he was horrible at the role. I mean, come on. So, you know, it's one of those things where, yeah, he's I don't think he's ever going to be asked back.
Did you know that Schwarzenegger kept the Mr. Freeze outfit from that movie?
I don't blame him. Sure.
He bought it for a dollar.
It's about what it's worth, too.
Oh, yeah.
With all the corny lines he did to break down the... Although, you know, the rumor is that Mr. Freeze is going to be back for this new Batman movie.
I heard they're going to go with some of the not A-list villains.
Yeah, Matt Reeves has a new way of... He claims that he can kind of grunge it and dirty it up and make Mr. Freeze cool again.
I like what he did with Riddler, so I'm okay with it.
Yeah.
And Riddler's always been my second favorite Batman villain, so.
And it's going to kind of focus, if you remember right, when Kevin Conroy was doing the voice of Batman in the cartoon, they did that. That was one of the more popular shows, was the one mm-hmm. with Mr. Freeze.
Yep.
And
because you actually get into Mr. Freeze's background, and if you weren't a comic book fan,
yeah,
and you watch, you know, Batman and Robin, or even if you watch the 66 series, they don't really go into his backstory, but his backstory is a love story.
It is.
Yeah. The reason he's doing what he's doing is to save his wife, who's got an incurable disease, mm-hmm. and he has a lab experiment blow up, and now you have Mr. Freeze.
Yeah, and I guess they're going to go back to that origin. So.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
I'm okay with that. I like the latest Batman. I thought it was good, you know, because I knew it was only year two. It wasn't, you know, the normal Batman we got in like Dark Knight or Dark Knight Returns. It was a year two Batman. So he's just learning how to be Batman.
I thought it was okay. I would encourage you to go back and watch it one or two more times. It doesn't hold up as well the more you watch it.
See, but I'm also a fan of like Long Halloween and stuff like that. And
I am
more
too.
The broody
I am
comics.
Too. Yeah. Maybe I watched the video that tore it apart pretty well.
And see, then I avoid all that.
And then I
form my own opinion.
Yeah. And that, well, no. It's not that I don't form my own opinion, but I saw it from a Batman scholar / film scholar's opinion. And I went, ooh, yeah, you're right about that. You know, now I get what you, is that bruiser behind you?
Yeah, just jumped on my back.
Yeah, I see that. You got a
be on camera, it looks like.
You got a back full of claws or
yeah. I think you can tell, huh?
Yeah, I saw your reaction.
He's like, hey, we're talking Batman, I want it on this.
Yeah. What about Catwoman? yeah, it's and once they started to tear the film apart, I went, ooh, yeah, you know what? You're right about that. Ooh, yeah, you know what? You're right about that too. So I had to kind of take a little pause there and went, no pun intended. You took some there too. But yeah, I went, oh yeah, you know what? You're right. Maybe it wasn't the, comeback I thought it was. I mean, it was good. Don't get me wrong. It was a good movie. I did enjoy it, but it took a little steam out of it for me.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I've been, since his death, I've been going back and watching all the animated series, and they still hold up to this day.
Oh, yes, they do. They do. Oh, it was very good.
So well written, so well acted, voice mm-hmm. acted, well animated, you know?
Yeah. Bruce Timm and Paul Dini, I believe it was, they did a very good job on that.
Yeah, story. And they do a really good job of taking some B characters like Clayface, Mr. Mm-hmm. Freeze, and making it where it's like an entertaining. You're not like, oh, I got to turn this. It's a Poison Ivy episode.
Yeah, yeah.
And because of that, we have the introduction of Harley Quinn, and everybody's obsessed with Harley Quinn.
Yep. There you go. An interesting thing came out of the death of Gallagher last week. At the tender age of, I believe it was, wasn't it 76?
Yeah, he was old.
Everybody says, well, I could have swore he died years ago. You know, here's the funny thing about the Mandela effect, Bruiser. The Mandela effect is just a funny term for lazy recognition. It really is. People, and I'm surprised at the amount of my friends on social media that have lazy recognition.
Yeah.
It wasn't Gallagher himself that passed away years ago. It was his brother.
It was his brother. Yeah. Mrs. Bruiser, when I told her Gallagher passed away, she goes, "Isn't he already dead?" And I was like, "No, that was his brother."
Right.
Now she looked it up. She goes, "How'd you know that?" And I've always been a Gallagher fan. So
yeah. And you have to remember now that it wasn't just Gallagher that toured under the name of Gallagher. It was his brother at one point that toured under Gallagher.
In fact, the original Gallagher sued his brother for using the name.
Yeah.
You know, without permission. He's right. Like, "Hey, I would have given you permission had you asked me."
Right, exactly. But people don't want to remember stuff like that. And see, right. It's the fact that I think we only have so many brain cells and so much memory or capacity for memory,
yeah,
that you have to pick and choose what it is you want to remember. So it's little tidbits like that. If you're not the biggest Gallagher fan in the world, you're not going to hold on to that. I mean, you know, you may be remembering Liam Gallagher stuff, but not the Gallagher stuff. So
I can see the mistake for a Mandela effect though, because they did tour and they were both in comedy, and it's an easy mistake, but it's not the Mandela effect. It's just like you said, lazy recognition.
It's exactly what it is. And a lot of people say, "I thought that person died years ago." No. It's completely not that at all. You know, and there are very few of all the Mandela effect things that people think happen. Maybe 10 to 20% of them are genuine Mandela effects.
Yeah.
I mean, there are true Mandela effect instances out there, but there are few and far between. They're yeah. rare. They're gems. This is not one of them.
It is an interesting wormhole to go down if you're ever up late at night and sure. want to just waste time. So yeah. You can travel down the mat. You can spend hours and hours and hours. And it's nostalgic, too, because it's fun when you have friends and you're all doing it because you all have mm-hmm. the different perspective. You know what I mean?
Right, right.
It doesn't prove if it's right or wrong. It's just a fun time. Hanging out with friends and going down, was it Payless or was it Payless? Was it Berenstain Bears or Bernstein Bears? Like, it's always a good time.
Very much so. Yeah. And it's one of those things when somebody dies and somebody yells Mandela effect, I just cringe. I just,
yeah.
You know, I can't, it gets to the point where I want to scream like an old man on his front porch and shake my fist in righteous indignation at people going, "Oh, but isn't that the Mandela effect?" No.
You know, look it up.
Look exactly. You know, if you don't want to believe Wikipedia, believe an encyclopedia. It's the fact of the matter is it takes, you know, it's easier to be lazy and say, "Isn't that Mandela effect?" than to actually just, you know, I don't know, follow their career for the last 5 years, look at Wikipedia and see what they've done. You know,
yeah, and it's okay to think someone's already passed away before they have, but just don't right away scream Mandela effect.
Right.
Just be like, "Oh, I must not have followed their career too closely."
Right. Because there's surely a story out there within the last 5 years. If you go put it in Google, you know, if you put their name in Google, it'll say so-and-so is retired due to illness, which right. Gallagher did.
Yeah.
You know, he had some issues, heart issues. And he had one last farewell tour within the last couple of years. So, you know, you can look that up.
I think that's why Kevin Conroy, whatever, the Batman, I think that's why he retired. Because wasn't it an aggressive cancer that took him from us? I believe it was.
Yeah, yeah. And he tried to hang in there as long as he could for conventions. I mean, he...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so. He, in fact, last year did a convention out here. Him and Mark Hamill were both on a convention.
Yep.
And then they had the girl who originally voiced Harley Quinn, and it was, if I wasn't on the road, I was going to go see it. But then I looked at the price, and it's like, oh, my childhood's not worth that much.
Yeah, yeah. Unfortunately, that's one of those things where you never know when someone's going to go. There's a third one that people may not be as familiar with, a comic book artist by the name of Carlos. I believe it's pronounced Pacheco.
Okay.
Pacheco. He drew the X-Men in the 90s.
Okay.
Late 90s. passed away at an early age as well last week.
That's too bad.
And a great artist. Great artist.
Yeah.
A lot of comic artists are going and at an early age. Last week, not a good week for people passing away. That's for
it sure. Always happens in threes too, which is weird.
Yeah. Yeah. It
at least celebrity deaths are always in threes.
Yeah. That's for sure.
I mean, there's millions of people dying every day, but
yeah. Yeah. It was a sad week last week. That's for sure. It was not a good week.
So go eat some watermelon and read a comic book and watch Batman the Animated Series.
There you go. that should be good enough to wrap up that tribute. Speaking of tragic deaths, did you see the big news last week about what was found in the Bermuda Triangle?
No. What was found?
There was a film crew from, I believe it was either the History Channel or... Was it A&E? It was History Channel. That's what it was. That was out in the Bermuda Triangle, and they were trying to find something on the ocean floor and ran into a piece of the Space Shuttle Challenger.
Really?
Yeah.
It had flown that far, like when it exploded, or was it maybe the tides took it? Or that's crazy.
Yeah. Well, let me read the story here because it's
didn't when we do the Jericho cruise? Didn't we go through the Bermuda Triangle or part of it?
Yeah, we did. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, we went right through it, right through the heart.
Yeah.
Of it. Yeah. Which there was all kinds of. In fact, we did when Foz, we ran right up. We did a UFO summoning experiment. We had about 65 people with us. Yeah. Meanwhile, Fozzie was entertaining and doing an 80s throwback concert, so we couldn't win on that deal. but the people who were with us with the UFO summoning experiment got to see a hell of a show.
Yeah,
as we summoned not one, not two, but three things that looked like UFOs.
Ooh.
Yeah. Meanwhile, everybody else was watching Fozzie. just saying. They didn't know what they missed. The crew had been searching for a downed World War II aircraft within the infamous region of the North Atlantic at the time that they found this wreckage in what would or what must be one of the most unlikeliest discoveries of recent years. History Channel documentary crew who had been filming scenes for upcoming series The Bermuda Triangle Into Cursed Waters has found a large piece of the Space Shuttle Challenger on the ocean floor. Now, see, I'm going to stop right here and tell you, should Josh Gates or anybody else find something significant in there, or even the guys of Oak Island find anything in their TV series, this is what would happen should they find something significant. You would get a news story before you'd even see it on TV.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. The team had been searching for the wreck of a World War II plane in an area of ocean notorious for the unexplained disappearances of various ships and aircraft over the decades. A large section of space shuttle debris, the first to be located in 25 years, was the last thing they had expected to find there. Challenger itself had disintegrated mere seconds after liftoff in a tragic accident that cost the lives of all seven of its crew members back in January of 1986. This discovery gives us an opportunity to pause once again to uplift the legacies of the seven pioneers we lost and to reflect on how this tragedy changed us, said NASA Administrator Bill Nelson. While it has been nearly 37 years since seven daring and brave explorers lost their lives aboard Challenger, this tragedy will forever be seared in the collective memory of our country. For millions around the globe, myself included, January 28th, 1986 still feels like yesterday, is the quote from Bill Nelson. It does feel like yesterday. You know, on that day in 1986, I was in school. I remember all of us being pulled aside and being put in front of monitors that day and watching the news.
Yeah, I remember that. They used to wheeled the TV in on the cart with the big seatbelt over it.
Mm-hmm.
And we watched the liftoff and the explosion, and then our teacher had explained to us what happened.
Yeah, and I remember being in shock.
Yeah.
Just absolute shock.
Yeah, I remember when we watched it thinking, why are we watching this? It's just, you know, big deal. You know, we've seen space shuttles take off, and then when it exploded, it's like, whoa, that wasn't supposed to happen. And then... You feel like it was the first time feeling grief for somebody I really didn't know.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because you obviously, with all the news stories and everything, you felt close to the crew.
Yep.
And it was like, wow, this is, that sympathy, empathy? You know, it was the first time I really had that feeling like, oh, this is not good.
Yeah. And that was still the era where we were treating people who went to space like rock stars. You know, it wasn't.
Yeah, they were superheroes.
Yeah, it wasn't mundane. It wasn't just something we did all the time.
And she was literally an everyday person. She wasn't like when you think of like Buzz and you think of Neil Armstrong and all them, they were fighter pilots. They were Navy men. They were servicemen, whatever. But Christy McCullough or whatever, she was a teacher. She was like an everyday person. She was literally like the lady that was showing us this video. Mm-hmm. And it was proven that, hey, you work hard at it, anybody can do this.
Yeah. And now we're talking about just putting people in rockets and circling the Earth's atmosphere like it's nothing. You just, pay your 25, or is it 2 million now? I forget. Is it a million or 2 million to go?
It's like 2 million or something like that.
In Bezos's rocket or Richard Branson's rocket, whoever you want to side with.
The only cool thing to happen out of that was when William Shatner went up. Because that's just cool because he's Captain Kirk.
Yeah, true.
Like if they would have sent up Mark Hamill or Han Solo, Harrison Ford, would be like, okay, that's cool because that's what they're known for.
Yeah.
But I don't care about billionaire tech industry guy, wow, cool, you got a lot of money, way to go.
Yeah, very true. Although I think it's getting that celebrity back involved in space travel that probably brings people back to the table of caring about it again. I think it's become so mundane and just
do you think we'll as a society care about space travel again? Because think about when that Mars rover landed, no one really cared.
Yeah, that's sad to say.
And that's a huge thing. We're seeing images of Mars from, something there, and everyone's like, yeah, okay, cool.
Why I think that is because, we hold these little gadgets in our hand that have more computing power than the actual, the actual rover that landed on the moon. The rockets that land on the moon. We're so technologically advanced that a rover landing on Mars is not a big deal.
Yeah.
Of course we can do that. Why should we be amazed?
Right.
Well, we should be amazed because we traveled that far into space, and we see it on our screens, on our movie screens. And because we can do it in a movie, we think we can do it in real life.
Yeah.
And that's not the case at all.
Yeah. We're still eons away from living in space.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. But because we talk about it and because it's a goal that's been set forth by Elon Musk and it's been set forth by NASA, it's just assumed we're going to hit that because we can replicate it on a movie screen. Well, of course we can replicate it in real life. Why wouldn't we be able to?
Right.
But I think a lot of people take that for granted that we have that capability.
Yeah.
It's not necessarily so. Although, I heard somebody the other day singing the praises of Elon Musk and saying, a lot of people are kind of laughing at him right now for the Twitter acquisition, but don't count him out so quick. This is a guy who took the electric car and took it to a whole new level. This is a guy who took basically the rocket business away from NASA and made it better.
He did. He did kick NASA in the butt. And now NASA's thinking outside the box to get human life back up into space.
Yeah.
I think NASA came as far as it has in the last couple of years because Elon Musk is, you guys are giving up your space shuttle program. Well, guess what? I got SpaceX. Here we go.
Yeah. So, there's something to be said about the minds that are out there right now and the fact that we take those minds for granted. We think, well, of course we can do that because we've got the minds out there to create it. So it's not a big deal. And I think the fact that we take advantage of that and think, well, yeah, we'll always be able to do incredible stuff is a little grandiose.
Yeah.
We should probably be a little bit more appreciative of the fact that we do have those brilliant minds out there that can take us that far.
I think what people want is those brilliant minds be working on something else, not necessarily space travel, but cures for diseases and but, solutions for, you know, hunger. And
but people aren't putting two and two together. A lot of the innovations that we have now were developed because of space travel.
That's true.
You know, I mean, it may seem like, how do you put those two together? But space makes for a great laboratory.
Yeah, we have GPS because of space.
Yeah. So
that's how GPS was invented.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's a great laboratory. It's a great place to test things. And, you know, there's something to be said about keeping... There was something to be said about keeping NASA under government control, but the fact that they privatized it now is not necessarily a bad thing. You can grow things by leaps and bounds if you have privatized money in space, as long as it is those private companies want to share with the rest of the world.
So do you think now that they found this piece in the Bermuda Triangle, obviously they're going to start looking for more. Do you think there's ever going to be a museum for the Challenger tragedy like they have with the World Trade Center, where you'll see pieces of the ship?
The story I saw on the news the other day, it makes me leery, because what Bill Nelson had said was, we're going to try to recover, if it's feasible, what's on the ocean floor. Now, what it looked like was part of the fuselage is what they were trying to recover. Which makes me think that NASA doesn't operate like the Army or the Navy or the Marines. When there's valuable tech left behind enemy lines or something like that, the armed forces will go get that valuable tech.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
For NASA, I think for them, it's a liability against their budget to go down to the bottom of the ocean and fish up, technology that's 37 years old. It does nothing for them. All it is is a salvage mission, and it's it puts them in the red, and it's not valuable to anybody else because it's old tech.
That's what I was saying. If it end up in a museum someplace, because they have a lot of the other parts. Remember, they tried to rebuild it to find out what happened to it.
Yeah.
And you remember they had those hangers full of just pieces. So there's pieces still there.
Well, I think, didn't they say it had to do with the O-rings?
Yeah, no, they found that all out. Yeah, through that. But if you go back, and there's documentaries all over the place, but they had to use like two or three hangers to put all the pieces that they found, that they could find.
I think if they came to the conclusion they know what happened, then
Then it says metal on the bottom of the ocean.
Yeah. If someone does dredge it up from the bottom of the ocean, then NASA has first claim to it. NASA's going to say that's U.S. government property. You need to turn it over to us. So whoever goes after it and pays all that money to bring it up from the bottom of the ocean, well, guess what? You're going to have a whole lot of nothing.
And I don't think any governments are going to go after it, because like you said, that's 30-year-old outdated tech. They're not going to learn anything new from it.
Yeah, and it doesn't pay for a private person to sink their money into it. I mean, it's...
Well, they could sell it at auction, make quite a...
No, you can't, because the U.S. government will turn around and say that's the private property of the U.S. government.
Okay.
And claim it. It's almost like public domain, you know? They'll come along and say, thank you very much for picking up our property. We'll take that back now.
Well, maybe they'll do what they did with the Titanic, where you pay X amount of dollars and you can go down and see it.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, but you know, to them, it's, you're in a catch 22. You can go down and try and claim it, but you're not going to hold on to it for very long.
Oh yeah, no, I'm saying like they'll charge to, you know, some dive team out there will be like, we can make a penny on this. Charge $10,000. They can go down for a half hour, look at it, and come back up.
That's one way to do it. It's down pretty deep, though.
Is it? Okay.
Yeah, it is down pretty deep. So. Let's move on. An alarming story came out this week that armed FBI agents raided the homes of an Area 51 investigator and seized computers, files, phones, and more.
Well, that's not good.
No. This is the kind of story everyone in the field of UFO investigations fears could happen to them, federal agents. In fact, when we had our guest on last week, talking about our guest that had passed away, Nigel, He had said that he had black helicopters in his book. In fact, I have the book right here. The book is Gray Aliens and Artificial Intelligence. Nigel Kerner was his name. And our guest that was on with us, Danielle Silverman. I keep wanting to call her Alicia Silverstone. That's not who we had on the on the show. I'm getting old, Bruiser. I'm getting old.
I just watched a terrible movie with her in it. So
did you? Well, then, yeah. Was it Batman or Robin?
No, it was actually worse than that.
Oh, okay. Danielle Silverman was on with us, and Danielle had mentioned that Nigel, and even she has experienced black helicopters and whatnot. She's afraid of, in fact, there were certain things, I can't say what they are, but we were talking off air, there were certain things that she didn't want to mention about Nigel. Mm-hmm. And they included government, they included government bodies, I'll put it that way, that she didn't want to mention on air.
Didn't because Art of Bell that. Have black helicopters and everything coming after him for a while before he passed?
There were some black helicopters that went over Pahrump from time to time. Yeah.
I don't see why does it have to be black helicopters? Like, come on.
You know,
we're always thinking Men in Black, and I get that, but
here's the funny thing.
Say they were government helicopters, or they were, you know.
There are a lot of black helicopters up there. There's a lot of traffic helicopters that are black.
Yes.
Yeah, so black helicopters aren't unusual, but there are a lot of police helicopters that are black.
Yeah.
You know, they're not just special forces. So.
Right. But everybody thinks that, especially when you say, you know, I was looking into UFO stuff and they say black men in black or black helicopters. Like right away, you're like, oh, it's the government. Oh, it's this. No. We don't know that. We don't know what it is.
Yeah. Yeah. You can't just assume. But back to the story. Federal agents or agents with no visible identification were showing up to confiscate years of evidence and files on reports of unidentified flying objects, extraterrestrials, secret bases, and data collected in both legal and possibly illegal ways in order to expose these secrets to the public. It is being reported today that both the home and office of, I believe this is Jorg Arnu, the founder of the Dreamland Resort website in Rachel, Nevada, were raided by agents from the Federal Bureau of Investigation. Jorg's one home and headquarters of the Dreamland Resort website is located just outside of Area 51 and has been a comprehensive source of information on the highly classified U.S. Air Force facility within the Nevada testing and training range. This story comes from George Knapp, the famous Las Vegas investigative reporter who himself researches UFOs, aliens, and Area 51. Here's what George Knapp had to say in his news-breaking tweet on November 10th of 2022. FBI agents came down hard on the operator of a popular website devoted to all things Area 51, its programs, lore, and legacy. More than a dozen agents served a no-knock warrant on the Rachel, Nevada home of Jorg Arnu, owner of DreamlandResort.com. With that alert from George Knapp, we went to the Dreamland Resort, the people in this article, website where Jorg Arnu gave details on his forum page in a post dated November 7th of 2022. Jorg says, okay, I've regained control over my assets in the DLR website, so here goes. In case anyone is curious, last Thursday, very early in the morning, my homes in Rachel and in Vegas were searched by a combined team of FBI and AFOSI, Air Force Operations. I was quite tense and humiliating for me and Rachel and for my girlfriend in Vegas. All my laptops, phones, memory sticks, cameras, drone, and other items were seized. When it was all over, I was left in Rachel with two broken doors, broken furniture inside the house, and zero means to communicate. Our Vegas home fared a little bit better, with only a broken front door and torn down blinds. Each location saw at least 15 to 20 agents rummaging through our homes and about eight vehicles. Needless to say, it was a spectacle for curious neighbors, both in Rachel and in Vegas. In the process, I lost all my data, medical files, financial and tax records, passwords, everything. That seems a little extreme.
Yeah, he touched a nerve there.
Yeah.
I'm curious to know what triggered them.
Well, let's find out. He says, on top of that, I am stuck with thousands in costs for repairs and replacement of most of the essential electronics and expected legal fees. I will speak with an attorney tomorrow about how to proceed. To the best of my knowledge, I have not broken the law. The search warrants are not very specific, but aerial photos of Area 51 and other installations come up repeatedly, so I have taken those down for now to defuse the situation. Why would the FBI and Air Force Office of Special Investigations be interested in the paper and digital records of Jorg Arnau? Well, anyone who has done any reporting on Area 51, anything from the sightings of the mysterious aircraft to the infamous attempted storming of the facility a few years ago, knows that the Dreamland Resort website is an excellent and up-to-the-minute repository of information on Area 51. Black Projects, the Nellis Rangers, Tonopah Test Range, home of the F-117 stealth fighters, and the extraterrestrial highway. As the website states, Arnau is a 25-year Area 51 research veteran and a resident of Rachel, Nevada. The site is currently supported by donations and has no outside advertisers. Until the raid, the site contained high-resolution aerial photos and panoramas of Area 51, satellite photos, schedules of Nellis Air Force Base exercises, which is a testing area, pertinent news reports, and much more, including a forum for public posts of questions, answers, and more findings. As Arnau noted on the forum, he has taken down aerial photos of Area 51 and other information just to be safe. It is obvious he's concerned, and wouldn't you be if your homes were raided by 15 to 20 FBI agents? He goes on to say,
I'd be real concerned.
Yeah, I would be too. He says, why am I sharing this? Well, first, I want to avoid any more speculation. And secondly, I'm concerned that overzealous government agents may use bogus charges against me to send a message. Putting the truth out there cannot hurt, he says. Thanks for listening. I will not respond to personal emails or posts in this matter. In his tweet, George Knapp noted that the dozen or more agents who stormed into Arnau's Las Vegas home held his girlfriend at gunpoint. Knapp says, we are gathering more information. Should he be concerned? Should other Area 51 and UFO investigators be worried? In 2020, Arnau says, we are all aware of the intense secrecy surrounding Area 51 in the desert northwest of Las Vegas. But 17 years ago, many of us were just learning about the far-reaching measures the government would take to keep its secret secret. If anyone should know about these kind of raids, it is George Knapp. In 2020, the Peabody Award winner, twice, updated his 2003 story about Chuck Clark, a self-described military watchdog who had used his own sensors to locate where the government had buried sensors on public land around Area 51. He also wrote a visitor's guide to the base. According to Knapp, Clark's mistake was talking about what he had found to journalists. It says, just 3 days after revealing to the public that he had found more than 30 devices, he said to the FBI and other lawmen from the Joint Terrorism Task Force the FBI and other lawmen from the Joint Terrorism Task Force raided his home. The raid was photographed by his neighbors, believe it or not. The agents took computers and personal files. At the time, Clark thought this was all an intimidation tactic meant to scare him away from keeping an eye on Area 51. The government eventually charged Clark with one count of malicious interference with a communication system used for the national defense because one of its buried sensors was missing. Well, he said he never removed a sensor. Clark agreed to enter a one-year term of pretrial diversion similar to probation and either turn over or pay for the missing sensor. Clark served his diversion time, paid for the sensor, and had the case dismissed. Interesting stuff.
That is. That's some real Men in Black type stuff right there. Again, I'm curious what he had that triggered them. You know, the other guy obviously was snooping where he wasn't supposed to snoop, but I'm curious to see what this guy had.
Well, if he had aerial drone photos, chances are he might have had, they were concerned that he had something inside Area 51 that is easily showable to the public that they don't want them to have.
Yeah, because everyone's got to remember, Area 51 is still a functioning Air Force base. They still do testing and they still do government stuff there.
Yeah.
You know,
yep.
Whether it's extraterrestrial or not, it's still illegal to. It's a no-fly zone, I believe.
Yes. Yes, it is. Yes, it is. A NASA study says we may be alone in the universe because of the great filter.
Oh, okay. What kind of filter? Like a Snapchat filter?
The filter.
The nice little stars around the eyes, the gothic one.
It's like the filter on your Pall Malls, I guess. I don't know. Anyone involved with or even just interested in the search for extraterrestrial life inevitably runs up against the wall known as the Fermi paradox. During a casual conversation about UFOs with a fellow physicist in the 1950s, Enrico Fermi, the creator of the world's first nuclear reactor, listened to arguments that the universe could be teeming with life since the Milky Way galaxy alone has billions of stars with the potential to have generated life in the same manner as it happened on Earth. But billions of years ago, giving that life time to become much more advanced and capable of travel around the universe, Fermi immortalized his name one more time by pondering the proposal and then asking the question, this is paraphrased, if there is so much life around, where is everybody? It's a good question.
Yeah, it's a very good question.
Many scientists have tried to resolve the Fermi paradox. One of the more recent arguments against the Fermi paradox is called the Great Filter, a nearly impenetrable wall that is blocking life everywhere from advancing to this space travel level. That theory just got a boost, it could boast as well, from an unlikely source, which is NASA. Why would NASA, an organization with the mission to look for life on other planets, suddenly accept a theory that could put it out of business? And what would Fermi think? Well, consider our best guess evolutionary path, hard to say 10 times fast, to an explosion which leads to visible colonization of most of the visible universe. And it says here, the right star system, which includes organics, reproductive something, which would be RNA, simple, and this is not simple to say, prokaryotic single cell life, complex archaeotic and eukaryotic single cell life, sexual reproduction, which there ain't nothing going on like that on this planet with all the video games, multi-cell life, tool using animals with big brains, where we are now, and colonization explosion. According to the above list from Robin Hansen's 1998 paper, The Great Filter, Are We Almost Past It? It ain't easy to be alive. That's for sure.
That's a great title.
That's true. It's a great album name, too. It ain't easy being alive. To get to the advanced level where it is capable of colonizing other planets, Hansen proposes a fast explosion of development is required. The explosive expansion must be fast enough to outpace an event that could stop it completely, like a supernova or an invasion by another species whose explosive advancement put them in a more powerful position. Hansen, an economist, takes a probability approach to solving the paradox. Perhaps advanced life doesn't exist because the probability is so low. But what about the search for signs of any kind of life? We haven't found that either. Hansen takes his probability argument back to the beginning of life, which is abiogenesis, the ability of life to rise from lifeless chemistry. Perhaps Earth is the only winner in the abiogenesis lottery. That's a good point.
Yeah.
Or perhaps Earth is the only place where an abiogenic life advanced beyond the single cell or bacterial stage. Another good point. Assuming a planet is able to give life the probability to advance past the multi-cell stage, it must then reach the tool-making stage. At this point, it needs a technological explosion. There's another quote here, and I'll try to keep it as short as possible. Similarly, technological optimists have taken standard economic trends and our standard understanding of evolutionary processes to argue the plausibility of the story that I gave above. It says here, this is a quote, that our descendants have a decent chance of colonizing our solar system and then with increasingly fast and reliable technologies of space travel, colonizing other stars and galaxies. In other words, an advanced civilization must advance past the NASA stage where we humans currently are. This is where a team from NASA's Jet Propulsion Lab comes in. led by JPL astrophysicist Jonathan Zhang. They attempt to identify the great filter and then figure out a way to penetrate it, either as humans or as another advanced species on another planet. The key to humanity successfully traversing such a universal filter is identifying those attributes in ourselves and neutralizing them in advance. Another quote, JPL astrophysicist Jonathan Zhang led the study, published online and not yet peer-reviewed. In a sense, they look at the great filter as a great destruction event, which stops an advancement cold. That could be a natural event, such as a massive asteroid, like the dinosaur killing, I don't know how to pronounce that, impact event. It looks like Chicxulub, maybe.
Sure, we'll go with that.
Sure, or Chicxulub. Unfortunately, all the rest of the filters that they came up with are unnatural, self-inflicted events. And they also cite that human civilization over the past 5,000 plus years, and in particular since 1945, have revealed much of what would surely impede, if not outright arrest, our aspirations to colonize other worlds in the solar system. That's one of the other points they point out. It is possible that no civilization in the galaxy, let alone the universe, can get to space travel without using the technology to self-destruct first. That's the other
argument. You have to be able to self-destruct before you can move on, is what they're saying.
Exactly.
Okay.
Immaturity is too nice of a word for the study's definition of the components of the great filter, and yet we prolong nations that seem to be the antithesis of long-term sustainable growth. They cite things like racism, genocide, and inequity, sabotage. The list sprawls. To surmount those blocks requires massive change to entire cultures, which have endured for centuries, dismantling nuclear and other weapons of mass destruction, focus on ending diseases and controlling viruses, develop technology to stop an asteroid, implement more efficient forms of energy generation. As the study says, the list sprawls. So in other words,
basically we have to get out of our own way.
Yep, you got to get out of your own way, and you got to get out of everybody else's. And then you can surpass the great filter.
Yep. Yeah. And it'll never happen.
Oh, don't be a pessimist about it, Bruiser. It can happen.
It can happen. You're right. But I think there are other civilizations out there. Mm-hmm. Hell, that time traveler we talked about last week. So there's a sister planet we're supposed to be discovering in 15 days. So
yeah, I mean, we're almost there.
Yeah, 15 days. We just got to wait.
There you go. Last story before break. It turns out that UFOs are making themselves known over Brazil.
Okay. What? There you go. They want to get exotic and check out all the thongs and
they need a
coffee,
wax.
You know?
Yeah. Can you imagine an alien needing a wax before he hits the beach?
What? How? So we tan. What do you think a gray does? Does it go olive?
It grays. It goes a deeper shade of gray. I have no idea what it does.
Turns olive.
Maybe. Turns olive, yes. That's where olives come from. They're just little gray shrunken heads that we're eating. Pimentos are just blood clots. Good luck to all of you who like green olives. I hate them. For the fifth consecutive night, pilots belonging to different airlines have reported the presence of UFOs over the skies of Porto Alegre, Brazil. I have hiccups.
I hear that.
Yeah. I don't know what's going on.
You're so worried about the what color the grays turn when they tan, and it's getting to you.
Green olives give me hiccups. Ah, they do. I don't know what it is about that. Look at this. My savior, intern Yoko has brought me all the entries for the millionaires
contest, huh?
She's worked her fingers to the bone. I have to give you this story here real quick here, Bruiser.
Okay.
I tried putting all the names in a spinner, in a digital spinner.
Yeah.
By the way, those sumbitchin' free spinners online don't work.
It's because they're free. Nothing free works.
I put all the names into the free spinner twice.
Yeah. Did it spin or
no? The list kicked out twice. It went blank twice. So intern Yoko has taken all the names out of the. I put all the names, all the emails into a file.
Yeah.
In my Outlook, so she took and she printed out all the. Listen to how many there are.
That's a lot.
Yeah. Since she cut them into this, cut them up into little strips, everybody's email addresses. Yep, they're all there. And put them into a huge pumpkin. So we're gonna draw at the end of the show here. We're not quite at break here, but thank you very much. So you get your, oh, you want to say, what do you want to say?
For all of you that said beer and boobies, I'd like to counter with Prosecco and Peckers.
All right, there you go, Prosecco and Peckers. Thanks, Yoko.
Got it.
You got it. Prosecco and Peckers. There were a lot of them, evidently. It must have got to her.
Yeah. She made a point to. Yeah. Well, yeah, guess what?
Yeah, guess what? That was funny. So, yeah, there are a lot of them. So we're going to draw here at the end of the show for the one in a million prize pack. Yeah, so evidently green olives and pimentos give me
the hiccups.
Yeah. I don't know what that's about. So yes, UFOs, we'll get back to it here. Over the skies of Porto Alegre, Brazil, between 22:50. That's 10:50 p.m. by the way, in military time.
Yes, it is. I always have to go 24 minus whatever to get to where we got to go.
You know how I know that? Because in all my years of radio, you had to fill out transmitter forms. You had to do it.
Oh, and that's all military?
Time. Yep. It's all military time. And 23:10, which is 11:10 p.m.
Ah, okay. Okay.
So, all right.
See, when I fly, it's always normal time, not military. Okay.
There you go. Four flights were reported between those times of 11:50 10:50 and 11:10 as I screw it up. Four flights reported the presence of strange lights in the sky to the air traffic control center. The flights in question were 4248, 3140, 4407 of Azul Air and LATAM flight 3406. Pilots noticed that the lights went on and off, but did not constitute a hindrance to air traffic. The moment was recorded by the Segaldo, Filho Airport Control Center. So there you go.
That's cool, especially when you get multiple, you know, airline pilots. There's got to be airline pilots that got to have some great stories.
True, very true. I do have one more moon story here.
Okay.
Let's do this one moon story, and then we'll go to break. The moon.
I love a good moon.
Don't we all? Especially when you're driving along and someone drops a moon right in the car next to you.
Oh, yeah. Pressing the ham.
Press a little ham on the window. The moon is a space Noah's Ark, and someone left it long ago. At least that's the theory here.
Oh, okay. So What happened to it being a space station?
That's right. That's no moon. The NASA Aeronautics Space Administration categorically rejects suggestions that our moon is not solid, but initiatives funded by the space agency indicate continued interest in the composition of its interior. The routine discovery of hundreds of skylights on the lunar surface or holes in the moon through which the cavernous tunnels beneath it can be seen recently prompted NASA to sponsor the development of robotic mini rovers designed to take images and study extraterrestrial crevices. The authors of a study published in the October 2020 issue of Earth Science Reviews, 5 a.m. on my doorstep every Thursday, calculated the size of these huge lunar cavities. The results showed that many of these underground cavities are the results of hundreds of times larger than anything that can be seen on Earth. According to the head of the study, one of the large lunar tunnels could easily accommodate a small city within its walls.
Oh.
Yeah. Together, these events have revived speculation about the true composition and internal structure of the moon. Well, that's true. I mean, we all know that. Yeah. And that's Swiss cheese if there's a lot of tunnels.
Exactly.
Yeah. The idea that Earth's newest space neighbor could be empty has had its fair share of adherents over the years. The modern hollow moon theory partly, there's a party too. By the way, if you didn't vote for him in the election, I don't know who you're voting for. The hollow moon theory party. The modern hollow moon theory partly goes back to a book published in 1966 by the eminent astronomer Carl Sagan and the Russian astrophysicist Is that Shlovsky? I love. Have you ever had a sandwich at Shlovsky's?
Oh, yeah, they're fantastic. Oh, the deli meat is amazing. The Russian dressing is to die for.
Oh, it is, yeah. Well, it's because he's Russian.
Exactly.
Their work, Intelligent Life in the Universe, contained a chapter as the curious nature of the moons revolving around Mars, Phobos and Deimos. They're a tag team, aren't they?
Yeah, they were champions for a while, up until Uranus came along.
Oh, really?
Yeah, then Uranus is huge. Uranus just destroyed them.
Uranus just slipped in there and separated them, huh?
Yeah.
Phobos
split them up.
Yep, I bet. According to their calculations, these objects had an abnormally low density, which led them to wonder, could they be hard on the outside but hollow on the inside?
I get asked that question all the time.
And what do you tell them?
I say it's for me to know, you'd find out.
Yes, indeed. The authors wondered if an advanced Martian civilization could have created artificial satellites to function as low gravity platforms. This orbital arrangement would allow them to launch deep space missions more easily, an advantage that Earth's moon could also provide. The granddaddy of NASA's rocket program, Dr. Wernher von Braun, unwittingly fueled the hollow moon legend by writing for Popular Mechanics an article about the Apollo 13 mission plan to slam the 15-ton part of a Saturn V rocket into the lunar surface. Sounds like he was a little frustrated.
Yeah, he's like, we're just going to pound it in there and just pound it and pound
it. Going to take the rocket and pound and pound and pound into the lunar surface? He really loved pounding and pounding and pounding.
Loved it.
Yeah, especially if it will wear leather for him. That's right. This experiment was a continuation of the deliberate fall of the Apollo 12 lunar module, which resulted in the moon ringing like a bell for almost an hour. Ding dong. Which indicated some strange and unearthly underground structure. Even though Apollo 13 failed to land on the moon, they were able to deliver a payload for the experiment with results similar to the lunar jolt of the previous impact. Mission control informed the Apollo 13 crew of their success. Looks like your booster just hit the moon, and that's rocking it a bit. The suggestive phrase has provided food for theorists arguing that the moon may also be mostly hollow.
Well, you know what they say, when the moon's rocking,
don't come a-knocking. That's right. Based on Sagan's earlier reflections on the nature of the Martian moons, two Russian scientists, Vazin and Sherbakov, sounds like a Russian chicken dish, suggested that the features of the moon could be solved with a logical explanation. The moon is an artificial hollow object, a satellite that was specially placed near a highly developed planet, extraterrestrial civilization. The Soviet duo published their thoughts on the matter in a 1970 article titled, "Is the Moon a Creation of Alien Intelligence?" Their circumstantial assumptions about an alien-created satellite paved the way for what became known as the Moon Spaceship Hypothesis. One of the first to pick up on this hypothesis was researcher and author Don Wilson. He outlined his hypothesis of an artificial satellite orbiting the Earth in two books, Our Mysterious Spaceship Moon, 1975, and Secrets of Our Spaceship Moon in 1979. So good that it needed a sequel.
Couldn't it just be that they have caves on the moon?
See, that would be logical. Yeah,
because we have caves here on Earth, and no one's ever claiming that the Earth's hollow.
Oh, no, there are.
Really?
There's a hollow Earth theory, yes.
It's just the flat earthers take over the hollow earthers?
No, they're two separate theories.
Well, no, I know that, but I'm just saying, like, the flat earthers get more of the publicity.
Yes, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. But there's a hollow earth theory.
Oh, geez.
Yep. It has to
do that's with, right, because there's a whole other, like, civilization that lives underneath the ground, right?
Yep. Yeah. Wilson cited anomalies such as shallow lunar craters. The strong hull protecting the lunar ship prevents meteors from penetrating deep. Hey, now. And the presence of strange structures and lights on the surface. Evidence of artificial vehicles and navigational markers is evidence that the moon is not, it says, is not, was formed naturally. Is not, was, hards, or words is hard. You figure that out. Inspired by Vasine and I believe it is Shcherbakov, sure. Soviet spacecraft theory, Wilson agreed that the moon was an ancient alien spacecraft. This required it to be basically a hollow vehicle, especially considering the size of its intended cargo. The huge spaceship carried everything needed to serve as a kind of Noah's Ark for sentient beings on their journey through the universe. Interestingly, Wilson mentioned the existence of lunar features that are like skylights. He referred to the work of amateur astronomer Dr. H.P. Wilkins, who was convinced that the inside of the moon, there really are vast hollow regions, perhaps in the form of caves, like Bruiser was saying, and that they are connected to the surface by huge holes or pits. Wilson suggested that these pits may be entrances to underground hidden bases located inside the moon. We'll just leave it at that because it goes on for a while. But there you go. The moon, it's full of holes.
It's hollow.
It's hollow. It's a Noah's Ark. It's that kind of
thing. It's where the man on the moon lives.
That's where the man on the moon lives, exactly. When we come back, paranormal activity is cited as a reason that a man, believe it or not, you're not going to believe this, was driving without two tires.
The ghosts were just helping him.
That's right. The ghosts were helping the car along. We'll talk about that story when we come back. Also, some people who built a church a long time ago in 800 years to be exact, in England, had a naughty, naughty sense of humor. We'll tell you about that. We've got some interesting stories. CCTV camera in a house filmed a ghost that looked like a sinister clown. I don't know how you feel about clowns, but we'll talk about that as well.
Oh, I can't wait for that.
That's right. It's all coming up next here on the Best in Paranormal Podcasting. This is Darkness Radio. Welcome back to the Best in Paranormal Podcasting. It's Darkness Radio on a Wednesday. It's a Supernatural News and Parashare Wednesday. We got big news at the end of this podcast here, my friend.
Yeah, we got a winner. We have a one in a millionaire winner.
Right here in this pumpkin, I have the winner of the Darkness Radio Millionaires Club drawing. That is, of course, we're drawing to, we're feeling giving. That's what we're feeling. Yes. You guys,
it's the season.
It is. Not only that, it is the season. But you guys got us to 1 million downloads in only 4 months, less than 4 months, between June and October 15th of that short time on Audioboom. We had 1 million downloads. So we decided we wanted to give you guys a treat. That's what we wanted to do. We're going to put together a 1 in a million prize pack, which one of those items, just one of those items, is a souvenir championship ring.
Yeah, that's looks nice.
Yeah, and it's got that Darkness Radio Millionaires Club logo that Howie Noel put together, the world famous Howie Noel. There's also going to be a special surprise in that millionaires pack as well, 1 in a million prize pack. You're going to get an autographed 8x10 from the one and only BCB. I'll throw in an autograph as well. We'll try and get something from Mally and Jess as well and throw it in that prize pack. And we'll send that out to one lucky listener. That we find out today. So keep in mind that ring is a 1 in a million ring. Nobody else owns it. Just you.
We don't have it.
Nope. We don't have one. And we never will have one.
Jess and Mally don't have it?
Nope. Nobody will have it but you.
Yeah.
And we also have one other item that we're going to be sending along to you. Darkness Radio Millionaires Club item that nobody else in this world will have but you.
Which is just amazing.
Yeah. And we'll send pictures. We'll send pictures. We'll put it on social media so you can see what it is. And we'll tell you about it here when we get it made up. But it's got to be custom made, which is really cool. So, I'm looking forward to it. We do have some runner-up prizes for select people here. I think there's probably going to be about 10 to 12 runner-ups. So,
okay.
Yeah, so we're going to draw individually off here for those. We'll be notifying those people, and we'll let you know both on our blog on darknessradioshow.com and non-air here. We'll let you know within the next week or so.
And the winners got to realize that there was not just 100 entries, like you were telling me. You're like, there was hundreds.
Hundreds. Yeah, it
hundreds.
Was.
Hundreds.
It was closer to 1,000.
Thousands.
Yeah.
Of entries.
Mm-hmm.
It blew us away how many there were.
There were a lot.
We weren't expecting that, were we?
No.
So thank you.
Yeah. Thank you guys so much for participating. And there were some funny entries too. What I might do is next week, I'm going to pull aside some of the funnier entries.
Yeah.
And we'll read some on the air because they were really funny.
Everybody's creative. My creative hat is off to all the listeners.
Yeah.
Because the ones that you would forward to me, like, were literally like laugh out loud.
Yeah. Everybody was great. Everybody had nice compliments and things like that. But I just told people, just put whatever you want in the body of the email. And people put whatever they want. There is a lot of boobies and beer and boobies, as intern Yoko said, and she put Prosecco and Peckers. There was a lot of give me my free shit. I love my free shit. And people went on a rant with their free shit, which was good. There was a lot of funny stuff there. There was pictures of Joey Behar and
that was... That I was in an airport when you sent that to me, and I just started laughing, and people kind of looked at me, and I was like, okay, like inside joke, but hilarious.
I found the custom picture of you and me standing on a McRib. I gotta send you that one.
Yeah, you gotta send me that one.
Yeah, that
one. You sent me the AI one, which is creepy.
Yeah, there was a listener that made AI art for us, which we both thought was creepy, but he said, "See, we have nothing to fear." I think we do. We have something to fear.
We do.
But there was a lot of good stuff. You guys are funny. You're creative. You're inspiring. I'm telling you, it's just fun just to sit down and go through the list of emails that were sent. So, you guys are great. That's all I got to say. You guys are just wonderful. So made our day. So yeah, we're going to draw for the grand prize winner here at the end of the show. So let's get on with the story, shall we? And, we will, draw at the end of the show here for that. Bruiser, there's a shark out there looking absolutely fabulous.
Yeah, I love a fabulous looking shark.
Oh my gosh. Although they're calling this shark very unfashionable. I think that's rude.
What is he wearing, white after Labor Day?
No, the shark is trapped in a woman's skirt and may die if experts can't find it.
They can't find the shark?
No, although the shark is sashaying, my friend.
How do you miss a shark wearing a skirt?
Yeah, well, that's just...
That shark's just going, over here!
Yoo-hoo, sailor! A very unfashionable shark has been spotted wearing a woman's skirt, with experts worried that the sea-based predator may die if it is not attended to, with the fabric forming a noose.
Oh. But yeah, that's not good. I was going to say, it's not going to die. It's just going to be fashionable.
It is.
Start a whole new trend.
Well, it may get picked on by the other predators, the other sharks.
Or picked up.
Oh.
Uh-huh. It's sitting there on the end of the reef, putting its fin out.
Yep.
Hey.
experts are hurriedly searching for a very unfashionable shark that was spotted roaming the waters while wearing a woman's skirt.
Shouldn't we be looking for the woman whose skirt that belongs to?
It's a damn big skirt too. Let me see if I can, I'm going to try and turn this around so you can see it. Although ads keep popping up on it. This is our fashionable female shark right here.
Oh, that's not a noose. That shark looks amazing.
Right?
Yeah.
I'm just saying maybe a wig. It probably
is. Yeah, I like her the way she is.
Yeah. Well.
That's beautiful.
Well, you know, I just think maybe she could dress up a little bit more.
A little lipstick.
She kind of looks like she's doing the swim of shame right there. I'm just saying.
It's a good color on her, though.
It is a good color. It matches the ocean. It looks like a huge blue jean skirt, is what it looks like.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah. Let's see here. So where was I? Oh, yes. Swim of shame. So this very unfashionable shark was spotted roaming the waters while wearing a woman's skirt. Although the image of the shark dressed up in a skirt proved amusing, marine biologists are desperate to find the ocean-going predator as it is at risk of dying. On closer inspection of the images, it appears the shark is actually being choked out by the apparel, with the woman's skirt forming a makeshift noose that are blocking the gills of the sea creature. I don't know. Well, yeah.
It looks like the gills are okay. From the little bit I saw, I couldn't see it as up close as you, but.
Let's see here. I'm blown with the pictures. The front two gills are open, but the back two are probably blocked.
Okay.
Yeah. So the shark may be in danger.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cayman Islands Department of Environment are keen to find the poor nurse shark before it is choked to death by the mesh piece. Now, see, if it's a nurse shark, it should be wearing that tiny little nurse hat, you know?
Yes.
Maybe.
It should be a candy striper skirt instead of a denim skirt.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Statement released by the Department of Environment read, "This poor nurse shark became entangled in a mesh bag, which somehow found its way into the sea. We're doing our best to locate and assist him, but so far we've been unsuccessful." Scuba diver Brad Nelson had first spotted the creature, whose life was at risk after sporting a mesh bag around itself, which the diver described as very unfashionable. Oh, Judgy McJudgerton.
Yeah. Just because it's not your cup of tea doesn't mean it's not another nurse shark's out there cup of tea.
That's right. That's right. Somebody out there is going, my God, that's fabulous.
I'm sure a Kardashian would love it.
Oh, yes. Very much so. Yeah. Yeah. Posting a series of snaps to Facebook, the diver said that he would have helped the ocean predator, but did not have the tools at his disposal to do so. Oh, right.
No, he was too busy uploading to Snapchat instead of helping the shark out.
That's right. Yeah, he was too busy trying to get likes on Facebook.
Yeah, he wanted to trend instead of helping the shark.
That's right. Nelson wrote, "This sad nurse shark was wearing a mesh bag. Very unfashionable," he put in parentheses. Judgy McJudgerton. "Unfortunately, I didn't have my fancy scissors to help him out of his predicament." Who has fancy scissors at the bottom of the ocean?
I was going to say, you have a diver's knife. Go cut it.
Yeah, exactly. Perhaps I'll see him again tomorrow. Well, by gosh.
Why, did you ask if they frequent there often?
I don't know. The shark, which experts are actively searching for in hopes of helping him before it's too late, could be anywhere, according to the worried officials. Although the size of the shark was not revealed, it is known that a nurse shark can grow up to 12 feet and are harmless and not aggressive, but will bite if they are provoked. Well, sailor.
Hey.
The official Cayman Islands tourism website reads, "The nurse shark occurs throughout the Caribbean and is one of the more commonly seen sharks, most often observed sleeping under ledges or in holes in the reef during the daytime."
Well, now they know where to look.
Well, yeah. Yeah. I don't know.
I don't think we should shark shame anymore.
No. I'm not shaming the shark at all. I think the shark is wonderful just the way it is.
Maybe they just drop some paparazzi down there. The shark comes out.
Yep.
They cut the mesh off.
Work it, shark.
Let's get RuPaul on this.
That's right.
Yeah.
RuPaul would
shark
find that
to be on RuPaul's Drag Race. There we go.
That shark,
RuPaul, would save us.
That shark would be found in a minute.
Yeah, RuPaul would save the shark, RuPaul.
And it would be given a contract in half a second. A mystical Egyptian amulet depicting a protective deity has been found in Turkey. Not in a turkey. I mean, we're close to Thanksgiving. I mean, I don't know what to say. Yeah, I don't know what you would do, Bruiser, if you and Mrs. Bruiser sat down to Thanksgiving dinner and you found an amulet in your turkey.
Yeah, it'd actually be really cool, especially with the protection one. I'd wear it proudly.
You'd just dig it out of the wishbone and be like, this here is my protection.
I'd wash it first.
Well, yeah.
Turkey guts all over.
Yeah, you don't want the grease all over your good shirt.
Yeah.
Archaeologists excavating a Roman-era ruin in the city of, I believe this is Amastris in Turkey. It's one of those things. I got to blow up the text now. I'm getting older. I need new bifocals. You know that?
I need to get bifocals.
Yeah. Amastris in Turkey have recently made the curious discovery of a talismanic amulet seal. The pyramid-shaped Egyptian amulet has hieroglyphic characters and ancient Egyptian symbols etched on it, which have provided an element of mystery and suspense surrounding the find. Amasra is located in northern Turkey's Amasra district in Bartın province. The site in the... I can't say this. I want to say it's the Kum neighborhood. It's spelled K-U-M.
Well, like come and go, the gas station.
That makes me laugh too. Have you ever been to one of those?
I was actually in one over the last weekend.
Were you? Did you buy a t-shirt?
No.
A mug?
No, I have I've been visiting them for years. So
okay, all right.
I used to have a hat.
You used to have a hat?
Yeah, I used to have a trucker hat.
Yeah. Did people used to point and laugh?
No, because everybody knew what it was. Oh, right. And you know, we giggled and moved on.
You know they do that on purpose, right?
Oh, I know. Of course. Wouldn't you?
Yeah. Yeah.
You either want come and go or came and went.
Yeah, well, the came and went is actually pretty funny, too.
Yeah.
The In-N-Out. I love In-N-Out Burger, by the way. It's my favorite burger place.
Is it really? It's okay.
I love it.
It's okay.
It's okay.
That's because you don't have a lot of them up there.
It's true. Very true.
Yeah.
The site in the Kum neighborhood of Amasra, we'll just go.
Come and go neighborhood.
No. Was earmarked for a school building in 2014, but when construction work started there, some remains thought to be from the Roman period were discovered. Construction was halted and the site was taken under protection by the authorities, according to the Daily Sabah. Excavations to salvage the ruins were started by the Amasra Museum Directorate under the guidance of Bartın University in 2017, leading to the discovery of some columns and other architectural remains, according to DHA English. In June of 2022, excavations began again and have continued to yield abundant historical remains. Let's see here. I have an ad in the way. There we go. 5-6 meter long columns placed on marble pedestals carved with eagle figures have been found on two decare plot of land or 2,000 square meters. 96 coins and 122 other artifacts of various sizes from the Roman period have also been unearthed. So, yeah, there's a lot of stuff there.
So I don't think they built a school, did they?
No, I don't think they've gotten around to it. I think they're getting rich off of
Company just went, damn it, we just lost a great bid.
Yeah, that's right. Recently, however, archaeologists have made a unique find. Among the ruins, they unearthed a talismanic amulet inscribed with various characters and figures believed to be Egyptian. It is possible to say that this is the only example found in a Roman structure in Anatolia, explained Dr. Fatma Bagdatali Kam, head of archaeology at Bartın University. I bet you they just call him Dr. Kam for short. When discussing the Egyptian amulet with Hurriyet, it was a find that excited us all, he said. The Egyptian amulet is in the shape of a pyramidal stamp seal, 2 centimeters in height, a right hand holding a sword, 2 wings, and various demotic Egyptian letters are inscribed on the amulet that has a square base that tapers to a pyramid shape. It is made of obsidian stone. Oh, that's
pretty cool.
Yeah. The quote here is, we see that there is a figure depicting the god Bes, whom we know from the Egyptian religion, depicted with incised lines at the base of the work, explained Kam in the Daily Sabah. On the upper part of the work, we see that there are letter characters and talismanic words from the ancient Egyptian religion called Demotic. The letter characters on the work probably represent this meaning of protection, continued Kam. As a kind of talismanic object, we can define it as an object that a person wears to be protected from evil and diseases, or in whatever sense he wants to be protected. We can say that it is the only example of its kind found from the Roman layer in Anatolia during excavations. Interesting.
Yeah, that's really cool. I like that kind of stuff's really cool and fascinating when you pick up stuff from all those years ago.
Yeah, very much so. We move on. We've got 3 stories left here on Supernatural News today, and then we'll do our drawing. Let's get to it. CCTV camera in the house films a ghost that looks like a sinister clown.
That would freak me out.
Yeah, it'd be a little
I'm
freaky.
Not scared of clowns, but just you're not expecting to see a clown. You see a clown, that's scary.
Yeah, exactly. 34-year-old Amanda Pitt with her husband Jeffrey and their four children live in Pennsylvania in a rented private home that they moved into in 2020. The house has a surveillance system that automatically sends security alerts to your phone when it detects something suspicious. And over the past 2 years, Amanda regularly received messages while no traces of strangers entering the house were found. That, according to reports, this could be attributed to some kind of technical glitch, suggesting that the camera might be reacting to family members or their dog. But the messages came even when no one was in the house. Also in the house and around it, some incomprehensible screams were continually heard. Once the camera filmed how, during the absence of the family in the house, the door to one of the rooms opened by itself. Another time in an empty house, the water faucet in the kitchen turned on by itself. However, all of these were only flowers in comparison to the recent incident. On October 21st of 2021, Amanda woke up at 3:40 a.m. to an incomprehensible noise, as if someone was walking around their house, stepping heavily on the floorboards.
Well, it's the clown shoes.
Of course, they're huge, and they have wooden soles.
Yeah.
When she checked the security camera screens, she almost screamed in horror. There is clearly a visible human figure standing in the kitchen doorway. Here's that human figure for you, Bruiser, if you can see it.
Oh, that's a human figure, all right.
Yeah, it is.
Looks like it's got long hair and a clown outfit.
Yeah, and a clown outfit on, right? Her husband, or she says, my husband Jeffrey slept in bed with me. Well, he should, especially if there's people walking around. So it couldn't be him. I checked the camera and stared at the screens for a while, she went on to say. When she saw the strange figure, she woke her husband up and asked him to come downstairs to the kitchen to check. However, the husband did not find anyone there, and there were no signs of forced entry anywhere on the doors and windows. At the same time, their dog named Ollie was found in the kitchen, which excitedly wandered back and forth. Oh, the dog was going back and forth. Like,
yeah, the dog knows something.
Yep. When Amanda checked the cameras again, the eerie figure was nowhere to be seen. She even tried to convince herself that it all seemed to her. I don't know. However, she was so scared that she did not close her eyes again, sitting in front of the TV until the end of the night. Amanda saved the camera shot that showed the mysterious figure. Now she and her husband think it was a ghost. Strange things have happened here before, and the people who rented this house before us lived here a short time and then quickly moved out, she said. Or he said, rather. It was Jeffrey. We never found out why, says Jeffrey. I never believed in ghosts, but things have happened here that made us doubt our beliefs. This picture is terrifying. When something like this appears in your house, you will begin to waver in your doubts, says Amanda. Now this family is thinking about moving to another house. In the meantime, when this photo hits the social networks, people began to write that the figure in the camera picture is very similar to a clown with sinister makeup.
I can see the clown reference, yeah.
I see the clown reference too, yeah.
If that was my house, I'd just start doing investigations. You know, because you're hearing screams, you're hearing footsteps. And then this, like, it's obviously ramping up.
Something's ramping up. I know that.
Yeah.
That's for sure.
And it hasn't hurt them in any way, so why be scared?
Yep, that's true. Paranormal activity is cited as a reason why a man was driving without two tires, according to cops. An SUV missing two tires was stopped along Florida's Interstate 75. Of course, this is Florida.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Waiting for the meth to come in.
That's right. As the driver says, paranormal activity was behind the disappearance, according to the Marion County Sheriff's Office.
Ghost stole his tire?
Yes. A ghost burglar.
So on the other side, there must be a big market for used tires, huh?
Yeah. Yeah. There's a chop shop in heaven.
Gotcha. Okay.
Yep. It happened, he said, because someone put a curse on him, according to an October 28th news release. That's the end of the story, believe it or not.
That's the end of the...
Yeah, he just, yep.
I curse your car. Any car you have shall only have two tires.
Haven't got a chop shop, Lord. And they took my tires.
Oh.
Unbelievable. And finally, our last story here. This one's a little unbelievable, Bruiser, and I'm going to wait to show you the picture because I want your reaction after I read this.
Okay. I like when you do this, by the way. You do this all the time on Dumb Crime, Stupid Criminals, and it never fails.
A rude effigy discovered in an 800-year-old church in England. Like, nobody ever looks up at church to, I don't know, pray? Right?
You know they had fun back then. Like, okay, let's put a penis right here. Right. Come on, let's put a little dick there, right there. Exactly. Just a little dick.
Exactly. A detail of a sculpture carved from an 800-year-old church in Hereford, England, caught the attention of a regular and sparked an internet debate. The image shows a man with his legs up and in an erotic position, they say here. I don't know how erotic it is. It is located in the Church of All Saints and was discovered due to the construction of a cafe. Of all things, why would a church need a cafe?
They're getting bigger. And they're thinking, why would we want someone to go to Starbucks to get coffee when they can just come to our cafe and get coffee?
I guess. According to publications, the image was detected when it was illuminated by strong lights located on an extra floor in the establishment next to the church. The sculpture shows, according to them, a naked man holding his legs up, exposing his genitals.
Okay.
An online forum user hypothesized that the hoist was a carpenter's revenge for not receiving his pay at the time.
For him.
The All Saints exhibitionist raised a few eyebrows in recent years, in part because he's now more visible to the public since the church started serving coffee and provided seats and a table in an upstairs gallery below the roof from which he moons down on us.
You don't want to see an erotic image when you pick up your morning coffee? You don't want to be mooned constantly by a man?
As long as it doesn't double as the coffee fountain, sure.
Where do you think they got the inspiration to serve coffee?
He's unusual in all kinds of ways, although grotesque, even obscene ones. It says, although grotesques, even obscene ones, are not uncommon on medieval churches, they most often occur on the outside. When they do appear inside, they're usually above doorways, arches, or entrances. And for many, this helps to explain their presence. They're there, it's said, to ward off evil spirits attempting to enter a sacred space. They do.
Wait. So it's normal to have a picture of a man mooning you because it's going to ward off an evil spirit?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So next time I go bless a house, all I got to do is just stand above the window and just moon everything. Yeah. Huh?
Give him a good old fashioned sharking. They do this, it's argued, by means of a kind of homeopathy, perhaps best summed up in the phrase, like cures like. Okay. This kind of protective notion does not explain this figure's presence high in the roof. Neither does another theory, that they are there to dissuade us from the sins they represent. Before the construction of the gallery, the exhibitionist was very difficult to spot. Literally hundreds of churches could employ skilled masons and just not make the proper payment. The church being an institution, it was almost always impossible for the workers to receive their due at that time.
So they just put erotic, obscene art all over the place.
According to the Hereford Times, similar carvings are well documented in churches across Europe with images of naked women prevailing. The carvings are believed to be intended to ward off death, evil, and demons, the website says. The cafe that lit up the image was built in 1990. The carving had already been seen by others and nicknamed Seamus O'Toole. You're about to find out why in a minute, Bruce.
Okay.
The tabloid also claims that at the time, there were plans to monetize the discovery by creating postcards, but the idea was stopped by the congregation for pushing the limits of decency too far. Many like to suggest that he's simply a carver's joke. In one corner of the roof, he could have been done as the carver was finishing his work, and the scaffolding swiftly removed before the priest of the parish, bigwigs, had their chance to inspect the roof too closely. We'll never know whether this was the case. To modernize, he just seems to be attracting attention of a particularly saucy kind. Something to ponder over the next cappuccino and cake. So here we go, Bruiser. Here is
Seamus O'Toole.
For your pleasure only, Seamus O'Toole.
Yep. He's a... that's a dick.
And if you need a little closer close-up, Seamus O'Toole.
Yeah. Yep. That's a butthole and a dick.
There he is in 3D, my friend. Seamus O'Toole.
It's a fantastic joke. I love it.
Isn't that great? Isn't that special? Seamus O'Toole.
Seamus O'Toole is my new spirit animal.
Yeah, it is. I mean, I like a home version of him, personally.
Yeah, I put him above my door.
Above the outside door. Yeah. People come in. They're like, hey, what's that thing out front? Oh, that's a door knocker.
Just grab the balls and go.
That's right. Just mixing up the entries here as we get ready for our drawing for the 1 in a million prize pack for the Darkness Radio Millionaires Club. It's just our way of saying thank you for downloading our show 1 million times between June of 2022, June 15th, 2022 to October 15th of 2022. It's just our way of saying thank you for being a Darkness Radio listener. Are you ready?
Let's do it. Who is it?
All right, here we go. I got one. Oh, I had one. I had one in my hand and it slipped out.
God's... See, if you're a Seamus O'Toole, you wouldn't just let that slip.
That's right. I have two in my hand. One that just, this is the one I'm grabbing right here. All right, here it is. Our winner, as you can see right here, is Stacy Zizek.
Oh, congratulations, Stacy.
I believe I pronounced it correctly. Z-E-Z-E-C-H.
Congratulations, Stacy Z-E-Z-E-C-H.
So Stacy Zizek, I believe I pronounced it right, has won our 1 in a million prize pack. And we'll be sending her the combined pack. Now, it's going to take a minute. I'm gonna contact Stacy by email.
Yep.
And we have to get everything together here for her. We got to contact Mally and Jess and get their items. And we got to get Bruiser's 8x10.
Yep.
And get everything together here for her. So, Stacy, it may take a couple weeks to get everything because everything's got to be custom here. And the ring has been ordered, but I haven't received it. So everything's got to come together, and then we'll get it to you. We have to get your address as well. So, and then we're going to draw 10 more times for 10 more people. We're going to do that off air, and we'll be giving 10 more people runner-up prizes, and you'll be contacted as well. So,
congratulations, Stacy.
And then we'll put those names up on our blog at darknessradioshow.com. We'll also try to announce them next week on the show here and let everybody know.
We'll hear some funny comments next week too, won't we?
That's right. We'll get everybody's, we'll get some funny comments together too that were attached to their entries as there were some really, really funny ones. And we'll give first names only. So
yeah,
to protect the innocent.
They'll know who they are.
That's right. I want to thank everybody who entered into the contest to the Darkness Radio Millionaires Club. Each and every entry was appreciated. And thank you much, guys, for entering the contest. On tomorrow's show, we have the gang from Destination Fear. We're going to sit and talk.
I'm really excited for this interview because you told me some of the footage you saw. And yeah. I saw
the first two episodes, which are at Crescent Sanatorium. The new season debuts November 25th, both on Travel Channel and on Discovery Plus. So if you have Discovery Plus, look forward to that. That's next week. Next week already, right?
Yeah.
Next Friday. So, folks, get ready. Destination Fear is coming. boy, is the production slick on it. It and the team is really gelled together. It's going to be a great show. Great season is in store. I believe it's eight episodes, I think is what it is. So we'll talk more with all four of the members of the team around tomorrow. Chelsea, Alex, Dakota, and Tanner are all with us tomorrow. So that is tomorrow on Darkness Radio. Thank you so much for tuning in. Thank you so much for being a Darkness Radio listener. We very much appreciate you. For Beer City Bruiser, I'm Tim Dennis. Oh, by the way, Bruiser, you're off this weekend, right?
I'm off this weekend, getting ready for WrestleCade weekend over Thanksgiving.
All right, WrestleCade. Remember, WrestleCade will have a link in the events page on darknessradioshow.com so you can get tickets to see Bruiser at WrestleCade as well. For Beer City Bruiser, I'm Tim Dennis. Thank you so much for being a listener of Darkness Radio and tuning into Darkness Radio. Thank you so much. We'll see you tomorrow for the Destination Fear Gang right here on the best in paranormal podcasting. This is Darkness Radio.